Dr. Roseanne Riley Runte is the president and vice chancellor at Carleton University, joins us again on CFRA for a return visit. Thank you for coming in. I look forward to our chat.
Great pleasure. Thank you very much, and a beautiful morning.
It is, and I know you're going to be welcoming students, and you love to see this kind of weather as they come back, because you want them full of enthusiasm and vigor.
Absolutely, but every day is a great day at Carleton.
Well, let's talk about Carleton University in particular, but I think it applies to universities in Canada as a whole. Are we doing it, and colleges, are we doing as much in this country? And I'm drawing on your experience at universities and colleges in the United States, your long experience in academic life in the States. You came here from Old Dominion in Virginia, a storied school supported so well by its alumni, both in its facilities and its bursary programs. Do we do as much in Canada, the alumni, to support our universities after we've graduated?
Actually, our alumni do a tremendous amount. At Carleton University, we had 10,000 students receiving $15.8 million in financial aid last year from our alumni. We had 6,200 students receiving $11.5 million in scholarships, and 4,000 bursaries worth $4.3 million. Carleton is really fortunate that our alumni have been so generous. And it's not just alumni, but friends of the university. So there are alumni bursaries. There are people like Don Yeomans who left money for a scholarship for students. But there are people who had no connection to the university at all, like the Johos, who have left money for students who want to go on and study in the humanities. So we are most fortunate, and I am so grateful to all the people who have given money. Now, is it the same as in the United States? That is a really big question, because in the United States, there are many different kinds of universities, and there is a big divide between public and private universities. So private universities have, for hundreds of years, been raising money with their alumni and self-funding. The state universities in the United States are more like the universities in Canada. They were supported by the government, and as economic times got more and more difficult, the amount of support was not available, and they had to start reaching out to their alumni. And that's what we have had to do in Canada as well. So we have greater expectations now from donors and from alumni than we previously did. There is a big difference between Canada and the United States in terms of giving. In the United States, if I give a dollar to a charitable organization, they get a dollar and I get a dollar off my taxes. In Canada, if I give a dollar, I get 30 cents or something like that off my taxes. So people in Canada, when they give, are actually being more generous with their own private funds. And so we should really applaud them and appreciate them. Across the country, alumni associations and people are getting together to support students more because we all realize that it is a very important for our society and for our own sons and daughters.
Tremendously expensive now, a university education, whether it's residential or not residential, whether the kids are still living at home or now out on their own. Mm-hmm. Tuition fees would be averaging at the undergrad level?
About $5,000 or $6,000.
And then post-grad?
Well, there are larger, but most of the post-grad students have scholarships. So every penny that we get from a graduate student goes back into our graduate students through awards. It is expensive, but I always say to myself that if I were to buy a car, that would be pretty expensive too. And in 10 years, might not be there. It might get affected by that salt on the road and might be pretty rusty. And when I trade it in, I get a couple hundred dollars for the car. If I invest in myself and my education, in 10 years, I am going to be able to do more with my life and to have a better job. And it will be a value that will continue to grow. So it is a good investment in oneself. The debate right now, I think, in Canada, starting with Quebec, is on two lines. First, the students in Quebec maintain that education is a right. Just as you can go to primary school and it doesn't cost you money, you should be able to go to university. There are countries in the world where that is true, but most of the time in those countries, very few people can go to university. You know, you have to, maybe 5% of the population. In Canada, we are trying to be accessible to a greater number. And so the cost of higher education in Canada has been shared between the student who benefits from it and society as a whole. That is what we have done over the last many years. But if you think about it, the portion that the students have paid has increased and the portion that the public has paid has decreased. And that's a cause of tension. I think that there has to be a time when we say it is appropriate that, or we agree, maybe it's not appropriate because students will never want to pay anything. And, right. And I would love to give them everything free, but that isn't the way it looks like we could make the country work. So I think we would do well to say what portion should be paid and to draw a line and say, this is the amount, this is the percent of education that the individual will pay, and this is the percent that society will pay. And that would kind of put the debate to rest, and it would give students a way to expect and plan. Because as it is right now, people don't know in a year or two how much it's going to cost. And once you start something, you really have to finish it.
Well, and it seems to me that the middle ground may be to give students access to an even larger pie of bursaries, awards, scholarships, etc., that recognize those in particular who take the cost of their education and the opportunity of their mm-hmm. education really seriously and really buckle down. I mean, the reality is many people coast a bit, and that would recognize that there are some who really understand the seriousness of that educational opportunity.
Well, I think you're right, but we have two things. We have scholarships that recognize that academic excellence and give students something for which they can work. But we also have bursaries because there are families that can't afford. And we always must recognize that in this country and make it possible for young people who don't have a family or who have hard times in their family so that they can participate as well. So you're right. If we could increase our bursaries and our scholarships, that would help those students significantly.
Do you see the source of that going to be exclusively alumni, or should it be at the government funding level? Should the government be into more student awards, as they do, for example, for academic achievement in high school, where a graduating student receives from the Ontario government an actual cash payment towards their future education based on their grades?
Mm-hmm. Well, there are both ways are possible, and I think that is a discussion that we need to have in society. In New York State, there is something called the Regent Scholarships, and they give a full scholarship to university to students who will study in New York State, provided they pass an exam. So there are many ways that you can decide to award students, whether it's bursaries, scholarships, whether it's individuals or government or a combination of above. Right now, we have a combination.
If we ask a student and or parents to go into debt for their university education or college education, there's an expectation that they'll succeed in their post-grad years and they'll have enough income to pay off those loans. In this town, are we doing enough to support our university students with co-op opportunities, internships, get them job experienced while they're still in school? That when Carlton picks up the phone and a prof says, I've got a really good intern for you here, that the employers in this town say, send them on in, let's make it work.
So we have expanded our co-op programs in an extraordinary way in the last 5 years. And we now offer co-op for almost every single department across the university. The numbers of students participating in co-op programs has grown every year, and we've been placing more students every year in co-ops. The co-op opportunities follow a little bit the economy, and if companies close, we can't place students there. So we hope that the economy starts coming back, and part of our contribution to that is through our Lead to Win and our TIM programs, where our students set up their own companies and create jobs not only for themselves but for other students. And in the last 2 years, approximately 200 companies have been started by Carleton students and graduates in the Ottawa region. So this is really an exciting piece of news and a good thing for the regional economy, and I think it shows a commitment of the university to the region.
And what about the employers? Is there commitment there from employers?
Absolutely.
Do they get it?
They are absolutely thrilled with the students that they have working for them. We have students who are offered after their co-op program part-time employment until they graduate because their employer likes them so much. Students working for the federal government being given full responsibility jobs because they are so good.
Can we speak for a moment about the mental health of students?
Mm-hmm.
And we're tight for time. Carleton University has installed a new series of security measures to ensure that the student is secure while on campus.
Mm-hmm.
What are you doing to ensure that those children who, I call them children, certainly in their transition years, maybe for the first time away from home, facing a lot of pressures, peer pressure, academic pressure, economic pressure, that their mental health is being attended to?
That is an issue that has come to the fore in recent years. People didn't talk about mental health. Now we do, and Carleton actually won an award last year for the best program in the country to help students and faculty members recognize the signs of distress and to understand what we should do and where we can send students for help and what systems of help and support we have on campus. And I'm really proud of the faculty and students who have stepped up and said, we want training, we want to help each other, and we want to make this a part, an important part of our lives about which we can speak in public.
So you think things are better than they were 2 years ago?
Absolutely, yeah.
8:38 at 580 CFRA, Dr. Roseanne O'Reilly Runty is here, Vice Chancellor of Carleton and President of Carleton University. We've been talking about emphasis on costs and tuition and bursaries and involvement of the alumni. Let's talk about Carleton's emphasis on international studies and international programs. It seems to me this is one of the areas that Carleton is recognized as having a leadership role in this country, that students are coming here saying, I want to be part of the international program at Carleton. Are you expanding it? Where does it stand?
Absolutely. We have the Norman Patterson School of International Affairs, which is known as the number two program in the whole world. We have the best public policy, international policy. We have always been a school that focused on internationalism, probably because we're in the nation's capital and we have all of the embassies of the world here. So we have constantly a flow of foreign ministers, ambassadors, visitors that can come and enrich our classrooms. We really believe that we can't do business in the in Canada without doing business in the world. And so we talk about going global and being global. And if our students graduate having had an international experience, our international business students go to China and they come back speaking Chinese. And last spring, we actually had one of our students get up and do for the Chinese ambassador a rap poem that he had written in Chinese. And he got this a standing ovation because they're so good. But if you want to sell something to somebody, you have to speak their language. You have to know how they think. You can't sell without knowing about the rest of the world. So Canada needs Carleton graduates, and we need that international focus. Not every student can go abroad. So bringing students from abroad is really important, because otherwise our students may never encounter students with other cultures. And
how do you feel about the call for Canada? Just recently, a report came out saying, yes, we've got to double the number of international students, and we should do it over the next 10-year period. It's good for Canada. It's good for business. It's good for the universities. Do we have the space? And what about the costs?
Actually, I think it is very important that we increase the number of international students. There is and there will be space. Across the country, there is going to be a little dip in the university-age students, so we should fill it with the international students. International students pay full fees, so it isn't a cost to Canada. And if they really like Canada and they are able to contribute to our economy on graduation by providing jobs, then that's really great for our country.
So you spoke a few moments ago about the student who went to Japan, came back and did a rap poem. That introduces a subject I wanted to get into with you. You're a poet. You've been published in many different languages. I was telling our listeners about this earlier. You have a tremendous appreciation for the arts. Mm-hmm. Very often, small-c conservatives reject the notion that we have to have public funding for the arts in Canada. And I think that there has been a new kind of pragmatism that has taken hold that says universities should be about getting you ready for a job, and post-secondary education should just be about getting a job, and let's stop funding culture and funding the arts. I'd like to get your feedback on what role you think universities in the modern era, in this, the 21st century, should play in terms of promoting the arts and giving people an appreciation for the culture of the society they live in.
A few years ago, somebody actually threw those that argument at me, and I remember looking it up and finding out that voluntary organizations, non-profit organizations, are actually the 11th largest employer in the country, and arts organizations were the 8th. Hmm. So one could say that they do also contribute to the economy, and one should not forget that. But life is about more than a job. Life is about being a fulfilled individual and having those moments of beauty, epiphany, of happiness. And I always say to students and their families, when you go to university, it is about getting a job. It is about doing all that you can to learn and be a good employee when you graduate. But it's also about being a good person and having good core values and being able to appreciate languages, arts, music, culture. Those are things that will make you happy after work. You might be a sports enthusiast, you might be a chess maniac, or you might just love Vincent van Gogh at the National Gallery. We all need those moments of beauty in our lives, and they are precious. Jean-Jacques Rousseau said that he one time almost died, and when he woke up, he realized that when he thought of his life, it was like a string of pearls around his neck, and there were special moments of great pleasure, great beauty, satisfaction of having done a good job. Those were the things that were really important, and some of those things are indeed the arts and culture.
One of the young people that recently received a national recognition for music, mm-hmm, was from Carleton University. Young pianist from Carleton University competed among 600,000 young musicians across the country in the Kiwanis Music Festivals, over 200 music festivals, and achieved top honors for his piano play. And it just seems to me that we ought to not lose sight of the fact that that's through history has been the key role of universities. In addition to getting people ready for jobs, it's to pursue the arts and to enrich our societies.
Absolutely. If we, it's a way of expressing ourselves. And I think that if we are a civilization that can afford to play. We should also be a civilization that can afford to appreciate the arts. And so that's really important. But I think as well, we can use those arts to good ends, because people have used the arts as ways to help people express their frustrations, to become themselves happier individuals. You don't have to be a great artist to appreciate art or to even do art.
Tell the story, would you, of your experience once when you got a grant? I think you attended in Japan on this grant.
Yeah.
And how you learned how they incorporate art into their culture.
So the Japan Foundation invited me to write a poem for the Emperor of Japan with two of the most outstanding poets of Japan. And we wrote the poem. And as we did, I was shown the newspaper. And every day the newspaper in Japan has a small poem at the top of the newspaper. And it is the custom of Japanese people to read that poem before they read the unsettling headlines of the day, to have that moment of peace and thoughtful beauty that will actually make them able to face that headline, no matter what it is. And I think we all need that.
How do you have those discussions? Again, I'm coming back to these transition years. You know, they're now at university. In many ways, you are their parents, the professors, the deans. You are their parents, surrogate parents while they're there. You're helping them through these transition years between total dependency on mom and dad and getting ready to be totally independent, but not quite there yet, to help them discover the paths that they're going to want to follow.
Well, we do something that's really nice at Carleton University. We have what's called a co-curricular resume. And so students get not only their regular transcript of their grades when they graduate, but they can have this co-curricular resume. And we encourage students to participate in campus activities like student radio, newspaper, choir, orchestra. We also encourage them to work in the community with homeless people, with food banks, with environmental projects. And they have to write up what they learned in each of these projects. And they put this on the record. It means that they reflect while they're doing this about the meaning of it in their lives, but also when they go out in the end to get a job. And I've hired many people, and you know, you see two people with great transcripts, but then you see one of them that has had an international experience, that has been volunteering in the community and has learned many other things. I think that's the person I want to hire, because they will be a better employee, but they'll also be a better person, and they'll be the person that you want as your friend.
Well, I appreciate you dropping by to see us. I know you don't bake cookies for all the students to welcome them to university anymore, because it was on the advice of some students, right, who said, no, the cookies, there's some people starving in the world. We have a different idea than you baking cookies for us.
The students asked that we make a donation in their name to the Red Cross for people who don't have enough to eat, as a symbolic donation. Just as the cookies were symbolic, I care about the students and they care about the world.
Yeah. You still bake cookies for them once in a while, don't you?
Absolutely. You know, we have to do that.
Well, you have to mother them a little bit. We as parents are kind of counting on that from time to time. I appreciate you being here. Appreciate
Thank
it
you.
Very much. Roseanne O'Reilly Runte, Dr. Roseanne O'Reilly Runte, the President and Vice Chancellor of Carleton University.